Good evening, friends of the Bulkley Valley and beyond. My name is Thomas Tom Roper, and you are listening to CICK, Smithers Community Radio, 93.9 on your FM dial. My program, On the Ropes, is broadcasting from the Cassia Territory of the Gidimdum Clan, home of the Wet'suwet'en. Well, ladies and gentlemen, it looks like we're together and ready to go. We are coming to the end of the month. It's been quite a year, an unbelievable year, but it seems that all years are very similar. We're broadcasting from the CN train car right beside Central Park building. And tonight we have a special guest, Paul. And your last name, Paul, I'm pronouncing it as Vidak. Does that sound correct?
Wojdak.
Yeah, Wojdak.
Yeah,
Wojdak.
That would be the proper Polish pronunciation. And as we've chatted, many people know me as Wojak. But
right. They may be saying that with the TV character of Wojak on there. Yes, so Paul has been in the Bulkley Valley for quite a time, and he's a geologist by trade, but at the present time, he's become an author. So I just wanted to sort of introduce you, Paul, and to if you could let us kind of know where you came from and how you got to the Bulkley Valley is always one of my main questions.
Yes, well, I was born in England, grew up in Ontario, came to Vancouver as a geology student, and worked then in mineral exploration for a couple of different companies and in various places. And then the opportunity came to apply for the job of regional geologist with the BC government in Smithers. And I was successful in that, and that's what brought me here. It was the job.
I see. That sounds like that was quite an opportunity to achieve that job, Paul. Just a little bit before we go further from that, why did you not go to a geology course in Ontario? Like, what would bring you to Vancouver? What would the difference be?
Well, I guess because my parents had traveled, I always expected that I would travel.
Mm-hmm.
And when it came to selecting grad school, it was either the East Coast or the West Coast. And obviously a little more, a bigger step and more adventure in going to the West Coast. So that was the reason.
That was part of it. Okay, well, that sounds very good. So the lifestyle, the geologist lifestyle, does that leave you at the desk, or were you out on the road quite a bit?
Well, in certainly in mineral exploration, you're traveling and you're in the field season. And of course, if you work out of the country, which did a little bit, you can work year round, go some other place. But in the regional geology job here, that was certainly one of the attractions, is that I could control what my field time was, and that it was, well, much less than being an exploration geologist, and quite enjoyable.
Right, right. And I'm assuming from your decision to go into writing, you did gain a bit of experience from the geology job where you have
Very
to do
true.
A lot of research, you've got to understand the properties, and then you've got to make reports.
Yes. Yes, and these reports, when I worked as regional geologist, these were publications of the government that were summaries of mineral exploration mm-hmm. activity and what was going on at mines. So it was writing that was critically reviewed, for everything from technical content to grammar and spelling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes, it was a training ground, if you will.
Yes. No, I think that sounds like a very true situation, a very good training ground, because it is very specific when you're in the mining
yes.
research and putting it down on paper so
yes.
that it's understandable.
Yes, that's right. Like sometimes I would go back and reread something that I'd written, whatever, a month or a year earlier, and find, what was I talking about? Like, this doesn't make sense. And, yeah. You know, sometimes you're too close to things. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Needs a bit of a step back on that. No, that sounds real good, Paul. Now, we've got a little program here that we try to do on our... we bring on a playlist, and so each person that comes on for an interview, we try to find out what type of music they like. And so I'd like to play the first song just to get us started along that track. And this particular song is by a guy called George Leach, and his song is called Take Your Time. So we'll just play that along, and then maybe we can have a few words from you
okay.
why you've chosen that.
All right.
Let's see if we can get that to happen.
You do.
Well, that was a pretty interesting song, Paul. Is it any relation to that song, to yourself, taking your time at your...
Yeah, maybe. There's a lot of lines there that I like. That,
yeah.
No such thing as mistakes, only chances you didn't take.
Yeah, that sounds a real mm-hmm. good.
Yeah.
That's definitely a good little route to go on that one now. So on with the... I don't think I got anything out of the bio...
Well, George Leach is, I think, from Lillooet.
Okay.
I'm not sure what nation that is there, but that's his origin.
Right.
And, I like blues music.
Yeah.
And, that's just a favorite one of them.
Definitely. And he's a very smooth operator on that song specifically, anyway. So, Paul, just going back a little bit, like, I'm always curious as to... whether children follow their parents' direction. And now if you look at like a hockey player, you'll see his kid will be going and playing hockey and whatever. And so was your dad a geologist? Was that?
No, no. I mean, he had a very unsettled life, as you'll be learning from reading the book. He was an orphan. He didn't get much of an education. Perhaps grade 7.
Mm-hmm.
When he came to Canada, in England, where he was after the war, he had to learn English.
Right.
In Canada, when I was young growing up, he was a stationary engineer, which is also perhaps more commonly known now as a power engineer.
Right.
So a large factory that produced their own power.
Mm-hmm.
And, that's a provincially regulated business, so that he had to pass provincial exams to achieve a moderate level, a third class and stationary engineer.
Exactly.
And that was a struggle for him, because both from the learning background and, the knowledge level to know something about steam generation, superheated steam and refrigeration and the things that go on there, and also the English to pass the test, to read an exam question and know what it's asking.
That is a very difficult situation. I myself am a tradesman, and just doing the work as an English-speaking person, and I've been to high school and learned enough about, how to do an exam, is difficult. And your father to do that as coming in as an immigrant and then learning English and then being able to achieve that, I think it's quite remarkable, really.
Yeah, it took a lot of work.
Yeah.
I remember as a kid, a lot of evenings, him working with a friend who was knowledgeable and also had a language in common that could assist him. And it was many, many evenings working hard.
No, that sounds very interesting. So what got your interest in geology? Why did you not become a teacher or a doctor or whatever other profession?
I think, in school days I was, then you didn't get a course in geology,
right.
but I was interested in science. I was interested in everything. I was interested in humanities too. But,
right.
but one of the things that was very popular at that time in the regular news was continental drift and you know, the beginnings of understanding plate tectonics. And that I found fascinating. And I knew that the person that was writing about that was a geophysicist. So I thought, oh, geophysics. Well, I'm not so big on physics, but there's geophysics, there must be geochemistry. And the direction I wanted to go.
Right,
yeah.
Right. Well, that sounds very interesting. And geology is it's a huge field. There's so many avenues that a person can
exactly.
take within
yes.
it.
Yeah, I mean, not just between mineral exploration
right.
and production. You know, geologists that work at mines, but also the oil and gas world, mm-hmm. petroleum geology. That's another big separation from minerals geology.
Exactly, exactly. So, when you settled in Smithers, like, did you get married before you came to the Bulkley Valley, or did that happen here?
Well, I've been married several times. So,
right.
So yeah, I was married in Vancouver when I came here. So yes, I came with a family.
Right. So you have a daughter and a son, I understand?
Yes, I have actually three daughters and a son.
Oh,
and
perfect.
My son is a teacher in Terrace. My youngest daughter lives here in Smithers and works at the pool.
Right, right. I've met her before, actually, Paul.
Yes.
Very nice lady. It's nice that your children can remain in the north. That's what I like. And
yes.
My children, unfortunately, the moment they got out of high school, they were gone to the big city.
Yeah,
and that seemed to be the lifestyle they wanted to take a run at, you know?
Well, my son actually pretty much grew up in Vancouver and came here sometimes for summers because I was here then. And then so he's followed me a little bit,
right.
Not quite to Smithers, but to Terrace. So he's in the north.
Right.
But then I have my older daughters, one's in Vancouver and one is in England. So that's a long way away, even further than Virginia.
Yeah, exactly. That's where my son has been hanging out. Yeah, so that's interesting, Paul. Now, so leading along to what one of the items that we really want to discuss is you becoming an author. Now, that's something I feel that a lot of people have that inclination. They want to tell a story, and we've all got stories to tell, but your story is actually very mysterious. And I like that part about it.
Yeah, I think in writing I decided, well, it's a bit like a detective story.
Yeah.
There's something new, revelation in, well, not every chapter, but
right.
in a lot of chapters. There are things that come out as the reader comes along.
Right.
So, and it began with a mystery that my father couldn't really tell me hardly anything about his early life, and what he were just fragments.
Mm-hmm.
And I've come to an understanding that I think he had a form of amnesia that was induced by the trauma of his youth.
That's so understandable. Like to go through the type of upbringing that he had would be very painful. And as you stated, I actually picked up your book the other day, and I've just sort of got into it. I'm on chapter 12. But I did recall you mentioning a sort of a reference to post-traumatic syndrome, where his life was so intensely difficult that he's had a hard time adapting to that.
Yeah, well, as a child, he was in Siberia.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he never, ever mentioned the word Siberia to me, but he was born in Siberia. Mm-hmm. I thought because he's Polish, he must have been born in Poland.
Exactly.
But he was born in Siberia at the time of the Russian Civil War, and his parents were refugees. And all Polish people in Communist Russia were designated as enemies of the people, which was as good as a death sentence.
Wow.
So Polish people were trying to get away from the communists, and his parents died on the journey from Novosibirsk towards the far east of Siberia.
Right.
And I think he probably saw their death.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the kind of shock, the kind of trauma that that affected him. He could only tell me that his mother died in a train accident, and then his father died a year later in a train accident.
Right.
And at the time, I thought, well, that's a strange coincidence. Like, they both died in train accidents.
Yeah, it does seem very, very strange.
But that's the only way to travel in Siberia was on a train, and there were tremendous, well, there were not enough trains. People, and there were great diseases, and there's severe cold, and there's soldiers that forced refugees off the train. So,
and there's lots of people that need to move.
Yes, and 150,000 Polish refugees were on the move there.
Wow. Well, I'd like to introduce the book at this moment, Paul. So I picked this up at Mountain Eagle Books, and it's called Escape to Siberia.
Escape from Siberia.
Pardon me. And Escape from Memory.
Yes.
So that title is sort of indicative of what we're going to find in this book.
That's right. Yeah. It's both getting out of Siberia and then leaving your memories behind, escaping from your memory as well.
They're so intense, so tragic, that you really want to leave them behind.
Yes.
And start a new life, really, as such.
Yeah, and the term dissociative amnesia, the cycle, like, I'm not a psychologist, but the condition is described as being the memories still exist in the child's mind, the person's mind, but they cannot be accessed. They cannot be spoken.
That is just incredible.
And that was exactly for my father. He couldn't speak about, when I asked him as a kid, what happened to your father, he physically tensed up, you know, everything became rigid, and he could not speak.
So your father was alive through your upbringing,
yes,
Paul. And he knew you became a geologist. He was aware of that. Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, that's interesting. Well, listen, at this very moment, let's slide another song in. We'll mix one more in, and then give us a little idea of a little music sort of interlude. And I've got one here, another Canadian band. And I appreciate you pulling up a few.
Vancouver band.
Yeah, exactly. And they were quite famous in their day. And so we'll see if we can get that rolling.
Bye.
Perfect. And that was Doug and the Slugs.
Yeah.
Straight out of Vancouver.
Yeah.
Guitarist, vocalist, Doug Bennett. He was our man at the time. And they're Vancouver-based, and they were at the forefront of the independent Canadian rock scene for 30 years. Did you have any connection to that song other than it's a pretty kind of a groovy song?
I'm normally, I think, quite an upbeat and positive person, but I have been through down periods in my life where, you know, things have been kind of dark. And that's a song that I've played at those times. You know, it's that day by day I'm getting better. Yeah. Day by day, take it one day at a time.
It sounds so good, Paul, when you say that, because we all have.
We're going down.
There are situations, whether somebody's passed away or what, you know, we've had a marriage breakdown or whatever happens, and we're down. And I always used to call it like lower in a snake's belly in the grass. And somehow you got to get up. There's just no way that you can stay down. And keep going.
Yeah, I think, you know, your true nature rises above those times.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, Paul, if we go back a little bit more to your dad and the story, like, I was wondering, with the complications and the not understanding your father's life because he's incapable of telling you, did that sort of push you forward to figure it out? Like, it is like a mystery.
Yes, it absolutely did. For many, many years, I just set it aside. I thought, well, it's something I'll never understand. It's not possible to learn.
Mm-hmm.
And it was when I was here in Smithers that, you know, I guess I started doing some literature research, but more particularly was the kind of arrival of the internet and the ability to search all kinds of things.
Right.
And, you know, I began with researching the army unit that he was in the Second World War and understanding that. And the Polish army was... in the Second World War, was largely captured by Russia, and they were sent to Siberia, exiled to Siberia. And so it was in reading about that that I stumbled on another story to do with Poles in Siberia, and that was the rescue of hundreds of children from Siberia to Japan and America. And that, as soon as I read that, I knew that had to be my father's story, because the couple of glimpses that he gave, he said he was in Japan and he was in America, in Milwaukee. And I couldn't understand, well, how did he get there? Like, mm-hmm. It wasn't clear whether his parents were alive at that point or not, and who brought him there.
Wow.
So that was...
The impetus,
and this was discovering that connection that then sent me on, and I managed to locate a Polish, Polish-Japanese journalist in Warsaw that knew the story, and I got it from him, and that's really was the key breakthrough.
Right. That sounds so interesting, Paul. It's so it's such an amazing story, and then the continual digging that you've got to do to keep, you know, sort of bringing up these directions that your father was going, that he couldn't tell you. Well, I'd been here. I was in Japan.
Yeah.
So you did mention to me, I recall you saying something about your father. I don't think I've read it yet, but your father knew the Japanese national anthem.
Yes, as a child, because it was so mysterious, I began to think, well, you know, maybe it's not true. Maybe this didn't happen. But one day we had, when I was maybe around 10 years old, there was a problem with our furnace in our house, and the repairman that came was Japanese. And because my dad wanted to understand what the problem was, he worked very closely with that with that guy. And when the man came time for him to leave, my dad stood at attention and sang the Japanese national anthem.
That is incredible.
And you know, he told me after, well, he said I sang it perfectly, and I counted to 10 in Japanese too. Like, he was obviously quite proud that he had done this.
So, yeah.
And he'd never mentioned anything about being able to sing this Japanese anthem before.
Right.
And I think it was triggered by the particular qualities, the character of a Japanese person that brought that memory. It's like a flashback that triggered that in his mind.
That's so interesting. Well, listen, Paul, this is a pretty incredible story, and I think this book is definitely well worth a read. We've just reached the sort of the midway point of the show, and we have a responsibility at that point to sort of remind our listeners, viewers, that we are on CICK Radio, that's Smithers Community Radio, 93.9 on your FM dial. And so we like to put that forward. And the other thing that we add into that is we're very appreciative of our sponsor support. And we've got our sponsors up on the wall here that I like to mention. And I've got Accounting on Broadway, Bugwood Bean, I've got BV Concert Association, and I've got Ranch House Tattoo. So we really appreciate the support. We're a complete volunteer organization here at the radio station. And any support is always very good for us to achieve. So I will also just remind everyone that I am the host of this particular radio program On the Ropes. My name is Thomas Tom Roper. And tonight we are interviewing a very local geologist from Smithers, Paul Wojdek. And I'm trying to get that pronunciation down. You know, as a Canadian, it's always difficult to see how it's spelt and then to say it when it's a little bit different than how I would pronounce it. But that's what we need to do. We've got to learn.
Yeah, and I had to kind of relearn it myself. I was always aware of, as a child, of the proper pronunciation, but my parents succumbed to whatever the Canadian pressure
interpretation,
became Wojak. So,
exactly.
Yeah, so it's been the leadership of two of my children that have reverted to the proper pronunciation.
That's very, very good when your family can get involved in
Their roots.
The roots of where we come from. Because it's all, like my mother was in the war, in the Second World War herself. And I had a lot of interesting experiences that she told me about her family and so on. So when I went over there to go into where she lived up in the moors, up in the Lancaster area, it's very eye-opening. And when I look at your story of your dad, like you've led this story to me as something that I really appreciate is a little bit of history and figuring out, like, I wasn't aware the Poles were so reviled by the Russians, and I wasn't aware that the Poles have been pushed around the world. I mean, all of these Europeans have gone out. I mean, the Dutch are all over the world, the French are all over the world, but the Poles seem to have been leaned on as the
forced
work.
Forced.
So, you know, to understand your father's journey, I find it quite incredible. So you were talking now with this, you mentioned the Japanese tradesman, and that was sort of it's kind of an interesting pivotal moment, how these things happen. Like, why didn't a German guy come to fix it?
Well,
you know
that
what I mean?
The wonderful things of chance.
Yes, exactly.
And, that incident is what convinced me as a child, this really happened. I may never understand how it happened, but it was real.
Yeah, exactly. So, following then on this story, you were talking about the train. I looked at your map, And I was not aware that Vladivostok was so close to Japan.
Yes.
Like, I really thought it was way up in the north, and I thought that was the... Because at one point, it was considered the coldest place on Earth. And then... But it's really not that far north. It's really right down in the right. Japanese area, you know? So I did, and I can see now the connection, how Japan would be available for the orphans to go in that direction.
Yes, and Japan at that time controlled Korea.
Yes.
Controlled Manchuria. So they were looking to become kind of an imperial power.
Right.
Like so many other European countries were, and so they had a strong presence and a strong interest in what was going on in the Far East.
Yes, I understand that. I've read a couple books on that that particular period of time, you know, before the Boxer Revolution and all these right. things that were going on, and it's very, very interesting, the attempt of control of all of these nations that want to be, you know, controlling as much land base as they can.
Yeah, yeah.
But what I didn't, and I haven't got far enough in to understand, is why would they even decide they were going to help the children? Like, you know, when you mention the children of Ukraine, again, you and I talked about that a little bit, how the Russians are trying to take the children. And that seemed to happen in the Second World War, where the Germans wanted to take the children, because that's where we train. That's where we can indoctrinate.
Yeah, that's the future of any society.
Right.
So the children.
What would the Japanese gain by taking in the children of the Poles?
Well, there were seeds of friendship between mm-hmm. Poland before it even existed and Japan, because in 1904, 1905, there was a war between Japan and Russia.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that war was about was control of Manchuria.
Right.
Russia had controlled Manchuria before that, and then Japan controlled it after. And Japan resoundingly won that war, and they captured, I think it was something like 75 or 80,000 Russian troops, and when they interrogated them, they were quite surprised to learn that that I think it was 20% of them were actually Polish conscripts.
Right.
And you know, they said, "Well, we don't like Russia at all. We despise Russia." So you know, the Japanese then realized, well, these Poles could be our friends. They could be our allies against Russia. So that was the, you know, the some of the origin
right,
there.
Right.
And then I think from my trips to Japan, I've seen that there's a real value, the Japanese people have for children.
Mm.
And so I think that struck a chord as well, that saving children. And I think they, you know, even beyond that, they were looking for a positive identity in the world,
mm-hmm.
and being doing humanitarian things like this was, they reckoned it was good for their international image too.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I mean, from looking at it from a very high-level perspective.
Right. Well, I was always under the impression that the Japanese didn't really want immigration. They wanted the country to remain Japanese, and so that kind of perplexed me a little bit on that fact.
Well, these children were never intended to stay in Japan.
Right.
It was they were helping them go to Poland.
Right. Intermediary.
So there was Japanese ships that took them to America.
Right.
There was more children that came in a later rescue, and they took them directly by Japanese ships to Poland.
Right, right.
So, you know, they weren't really looking for, you know, for immigrants.
Right, right. But they were looking for doing a good deed
yeah.
in the world today,
yeah.
which is probably a very noble, in
yeah.
a sense, of looking
yeah,
after these
and
children.
And they're still involved with that. The The orphanage that my father was in is called Fukudenkai in Tokyo, and the Fukudenkai still exists. It's called the Fukudenkai Social Welfare or Social Benefit Corporation.
Right, right.
And they're active in Poland. They have donated money to Poland to support Ukrainian refugees. They have a strong connection. They have with Polish society.
There's
a Polish museum.
Yeah, exactly.
Japanese Heritage Museum in Krakow.
That is so interesting.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, Paul. Well, let's mix in another song.
We got all right.
Good
idea.
So I've got my. This is the third of our four. And would you believe it's another Canadian?
I've forgotten what it is now.
Well, we'll
Stan Rogers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's quite a guy.
Yeah. Beautiful voice, I think.
Can't get any better, really.
Yeah.
Where the earth shows its bones of wind, broken stone, and the sea and the sky are warm. I'm caught out of time, my blood sings with wine, and I'm running naked in the sun. There's God in the trees, I'm weak in the knees, and the sky is a painful blue. I'd like to look around, but honey, all I see is you. Now the summer city lights will soften the night till you'd think that the air is clear. And I'm sitting with friends where 45 cents will buy another glass of beer. He's got something to say, but I'm so far away that I don't know who I'm talking to. 'Cause you just walked in the door, and honey, all I see is you. And I just want to hold you closer than I've ever held anyone before. You say you've been twice a wife and you're through with life. Oh, but honey, what the hell's it for? After 23 years, you'd think I could find a way to let you know somehow. But I want to see your smiling face 45 years from now. In the lights on stage every night, I've been reaching out to find a friend who knows all the words, sings so she's heard, and knows how all the stories end. Maybe after the show she'll ask me to go home with her for a drink or two. Now her smile lights her eyes, but honey, all I see is you. And I just want to hold you closer than I've ever held anyone before. You say you've been twice a wife and you're through with life. Oh, but honey, what the hell's it for? After 23 years, you'd think I could find a way to let you know somehow. But I want to see your smiling face 45 years from now. I just want to hold you closer than I've ever held anyone before. You say you've been twice a wife and you're through with life. Oh, but honey, what the hell's it for? After 23 years, you'd think I could find a way to let you know somehow. But I want to see your smiling face 45 years from now. Yes, I want to see your smiling face 45 years from now.
That song can bring a tear to my eye, Paul. It's a pretty pretty good one when you think about that connection, you know. And
well, not only the sentimental part, but 45 cents for a glass of beer.
Yeah,
you
yeah,
and I might
yeah.
remember those days.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
But I'm kind of a romantic, and Stan Rogers has such insight into people's lives and Canadian situations that it's a real joy listening to his music.
It really is. It's going to be so difficult when we become the 51st state. How we're going to have all of our Canadiana that we're going to take with us. Stan was born in Hamilton, not too far from where you were brought up. And unfortunately, he died in a fire accident on a plane. A very big tragedy. Because his following was just growing.
His roots were in the Maritimes, I guess specifically Newfoundland. And of course, that's where most of his music relates to. I was quite surprised to me to find that he was born in Hamilton, but sang his roots.
Yeah, exactly. So, Paul, what we were hoping to do, if we could squeeze it in on our time, and we're looking pretty good, really, is a reading from the book. So is that something that I've got the book here? Do you know the page that you were looking at?
Tom, I totally forgot about that. You should have given me a heads up before we started.
Well, I can. I would like to just chat a little bit more about, your whole. Like, I'm very interested in writing too, Paul, and I imagine a lot of people are, and how to get, the mechanics of writing and then get it to go together on whether you're going to do it on the internet or whether you've got a publisher or that type of thing. It seems pretty interesting. And I had this vision, like when you have, when you came out at the library and brought the book and whatever, it seemed to me that you've just done this. But this doesn't happen overnight. This stuff takes years to produce.
I've found the section in the book, by the way, while you were covering for me there.
Yeah, it was perfect. It's all good.
That I had intended to read here. I wrote a first version, I guess. I struggled between writing, should I write a chronology of how I learned about it or write a chronology of my father's life.
Right.
And it ended up being a bit of both.
Yeah, yeah.
I had to give some glimpse at the beginning of the book where the story was going.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's how I covered that. And then another early draft, I had a friend read. And I guess he's not a history buff. He thought there was a bit too much history.
Right, right.
And so I realized that what I really had to do was to connect that history with my father's life, with the story. Why is that history important?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So, and I felt that right from the beginning. Like, I've only been reading this book for, a couple of days, and I am a history buff. My history, though, that I prefer is Gold Rush history. But I started feeling the problems with the Poles, the fighting in Russia, the situation, I could put myself in that time period, and I felt really excited about it.
Yeah.
And I wanted to know more about your dad, it's like, how did he get out of this alive? You know what I mean? But what I was, before you just opened that up, Paul, let's read this, and then I'll ask you that last question.
Okay, you can give me a signal whether I'm reading too much.
Okay, you betcha.
And it relates to things early in life, which we have kind of talked about here, so maybe it's not the best reading, but it relates to what we've been talking about. When I asked my dad what happened to his mother, he told me that she died in a train accident when he was 6. And your father, I asked, and he replied that he'd died in a train accident too a year later. I didn't know what to make of such an unfortunate coincidence, and Dad said no more. From several other inquiries, I saw that my questions caused him great distress. His jaw became tightly set, all his muscles tensed, and his eyes focused somewhere in the distance. He also said he was in Japan and in America as a child. How could that be, I wondered, and there was not a single photograph. I couldn't understand why Dad couldn't tell me more about his life. Once, when I asked how he got to America and Japan, he said his father brought him. I tried to imagine the circumstances. Could it be that his father was a businessman and they went to America after his mother died? But businessmen are rich, right? So why was he poor? It was murky and confusing. I began to wonder, was he really in Japan and America? When I sensed his mood was particularly good, I asked again about his childhood and hoped he could tell me more of his mysterious past. He added a few words. He was in Chicago and Milwaukee and was amazed to see a tractor for the first time and other machines. Later in Poland, he wondered why there were no machines there. While in America, he said the children were asked one day, "Who wants to go home?" They all answered yes, because his dad said, "What child doesn't want to go home?" Later, he thought this was a trick to persuade the children, as home in Poland was a poor orphanage, not the family home he expected. This is the only comment from my father that indicated he was one of a group of children, a comment that I was not alert to recognize at the time.
That sounds very interesting, Paul. It brings on a little bit of intrigue and wonder. Where are we going? What you know, how are we going to get this information out of your dad of what happened?
Yeah, and, you know, I can jump ahead here a bit. One of the later things that I never thought of this was checking orphanages in Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm.
And it was relatively easy to identify out of about half a dozen orphanages that were active at that time which one it would be, because there was many orphanages only took girls or only boys.
Yeah.
And I knew that there were girls and boys in his group.
Right.
And so I found St. Joseph Orphanage and then contacted, it was operated by the Felician Order of Nuns, a Catholic group.
Right.
And I found, I was able to get their archives and get the registration records of these children. And that was a challenge because it was right in the time of COVID.
Right.
And, so it was...
You had to stay on them to get the information.
Well, I couldn't go there, which would have been in person, would have been...
Probably a bit easier.
Easier.
Yeah.
But that wasn't possible.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, Paul, well, we're running along quite nicely. Let's see if we can put in this last song. It's a little bit longer. I might cut it a bit shorter so that we can get our conclusion in there. And this is a song you've brought forward by a guy called Vladimir Horowitz. He's the piano player.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, and, I didn't recognize that name. And, it's Chopin.
It's a Chopin arrangement called Polonaise in A-flat major.
And also known as the Heroic Polonaise.
Okay. And I don't understand.
Informal name.
Right, right. Okay, well, let's listen to it. It's a beautiful piece, Paul. Thank you.
Yeah, that Chopin wrote this in the time in the 1830s, I think, when there was no Poland. It was occupied by Russia, and so it expresses at the beginning. It's kind of somber and dark, and that's the Russian oppression, and then rising out of that is the joy and you know the anticipated liberation. It's right. The Polish spirit.
Right, right. Yeah. That sound, it's just beautiful. You know, there's a little resurgence of orchestral music that's coming back into society right now. The younger people are searching for it.
Oh, and, yeah. I know it's certainly that's true for Smithers with the. With the classic music event,
yes, exactly,
in midsummer, and yeah, I've attended some of those performances. So I'm not, yeah. Sorry, you go.
No,
ahead.
It's all good, Paul. So we're running ourselves down to the bottom of our show, and we're going to just close ourselves out. And I just wanted to ask you if you could. Explain where people can get your book and how that is going to come about, so to give them the opportunity.
Okay, well, it's available in book outlets in Smithers here at Mountain Eagle and Interior Stationery.
Right.
It's also in was it Countrywide in right. In Houston, and in Misty River Books
in Terrace.
In Terrace.
That sounds very
yeah,
good.
Yeah, and also in a shop, what's it called? Books and Company in Prince George.
Okay, perfect, Paul. That sounds great. Yeah. Well, listen, I want to thank you very much for coming down and giving us a chance to understand a little bit of your life and how you'd made this transition from banging rocks with a hammer to pushing a pen around and making yourself a book. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, well, it's been a pleasure, Tom. Thank you.
And thank you, too. And so I'll just finish up with our outro and see if we can close her down.
You have been listening to On the Ropes, Smithers Community Radio, CICK 93.9 on your FM dial. I'm your host, Thomas Tom Roper, and we will see you on the flip side.